The Israel Report with Rolene Marks for the latest information and the stories behind the news.
Rolene, how are you?
I'm always good when I speak to you, Howard, despite all the goings on in the news and my complete failure of the Hebrew language today.
Well, at least, Telech. I don't even know what the song is, but there we go. It's by Ivri Lider and Ofer Meiri, and it was actually very, very pleasant, and that's good enough for me.
Well, then I'm going to just give it 2 thumbs up.
Exactly. That's absolutely fine. Rolene, the world has gone mad. What do we even choose to talk about?
You know what? I think that – I don't know if it's the energies in the air, if it is an astrology thing, if the planets are misaligned.
All I know is
that the Earth seems to be completely off its axis and people are going utterly meshuggah.
Absolutely right. So let's start off in the UK. Because there we've got a countdown to the elections. The biggest nightmare is Corbyn as prime minister. What's the situation? Give us a bit of an overview there.
Well, it was very interesting today because this morning when I switched on my computer, there were two major newspapers that both kind of declared war on Jeremy Corbyn, both the Daily Mail and the Telegraph. And basically what they are doing is exposing his links to terror organizations, his sympathy with the IRA. They've accused him of being anti-democracy. They've pulled out the fact that he wouldn't sing God Save the Queen at any memorial event, that he's anti the monarchy. Everything they could possibly have on Jeremy Corbyn, they're pulling it out. And I don't know if this has any effect on the latest polls, but polls have shown the Tories, led by the current sitting Prime Minister Theresa May, ahead.
So that's interesting because yesterday I think you reported that she is ahead, but it was by a small margin. Sometimes it's quite dangerous to become complacent a day or two before the elections.
Well, exactly that. And I think that these terror attacks certainly haven't helped her case. She's facing a lot of criticism for pulling a significant amount of police off the street and also for loopholes and shoddy border policing, which has allowed most of these suspects to come through. I mean, we spoke about it yesterday and we mentioned that it is absolutely untenable that these perpetrators, these terrorists, are actually known to the legal establishment and the law establishment. So I think that security is going to play a major role in tomorrow's election, but we cannot dismiss the fact that Jeremy Corbyn, should he be elected, and this would be a tremendous tragedy for the Jews of England, for Israel, and I think for England as a whole.
Absolutely fascinating. The Mayor of London has also come under quite a bit of criticism for his approach. Now, initially, Trump made a comment. He's lashed out very, very strongly, but he really isn't emerging as – and I've always felt that some of the criticism of him wasn't fair criticism, but – the further we move away from some of these terror attacks, the less impressive he seems to be.
Well, Trump very much has tweeted that Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London's handling of this terror attack has been a major kafifi. And, if we look at mayors and how they respond to terror attacks, we look at our own Nir Barkat, the mayor of Jerusalem. But I think the icon of, how you stand to be a leader in a time of crisis is Rudy Giuliani, the former mayor of New York City. Okay, thank goodness we haven't seen an attack on the magnitude that 9/11 was, but he rose to the occasion. He was not a popular figure beforehand. He was seen as, very, very conservative, very strict. He was kind of culling a lot of the, although he was very tough on crime, which was a good thing, he was seen as rounding up a lot of the pleasures that people enjoyed in New York City. But he really rose to the occasion to be a tremendous leader in a time of crisis. And I think, and I have to concur with President Trump's tweet about him saying, you know, there's no need to worry. And I understand from a mayor's perspective, you don't want to create panic. But you also underestimate the resilience of the citizens of London. London, to me, is the epitome of resilience. This is the city that has withstood plagues and great fires, and is known as the Blitz City because the morale and the strength and the resilience of the city during World War II was something I think that really set the example for the rest of the world. In fact, Londoners have taken great exception to Americans say that Londoners are reeling after these attacks. So I think that Sadiq Khan greatly underestimates his constituency, and that he needs to get tough on terror. And we heard Theresa May saying earlier today that she is prepared to throw out the book on human rights law when it with regards to dealing with terrorism.
That's a fascinating statement.
It is a fascinating statement, because I think that one of the problems we are facing in the world right now is this almost crippling politically correctness that can't do this for fear of that it will offend that. But if you look at the way that we handle security in Israel, it's almost ingrained in our DNA. We know we look at suspicious people. We look at suspicious bags or things that are left around. We profile, and I'm not saying we racially profile, but we definitely behaviorally profile people. We have very, very stringent security if you go into shopping malls, into schools, into major public areas. You know, we have an absolute zero tolerance philosophy. We neutralize our terrorists on sight.
What's so interesting about that to me, excuse me, is the fact that Israel is security is so ingrained in every person who lives as a peaceful citizen within Israel. The fact that it is so ingrained actually, in a strange way, hasn't impacted on the feeling of freedom that people enjoy throughout Israel. You walk through Jerusalem, you walk through the streets of Tel Aviv, you don't feel that anxiety, because the point is that you feel very, very safe. In fact, it was quite interesting. One of the I was listening to an interview, and a local interview, and they were lauding British police for, I think it was an 8 minute or something like that response time to an act of terror. And we've spoken about it before. I was we had the unfortunate whatever it was, circumstance of being within a few meters away from a terrorist attack. And I can tell you that it was seconds before that attack was stopped. And probably it was maybe 90 seconds. And you see the British saying, well, they've got the fastest response time in the world because it took them 8 minutes. Can you imagine the damage that, well, we've seen the damage that could be done in that period of time?
Well, you were there, Howard, as you just pointed out. And you see, first of all, life goes on, and here people almost defiantly come out after a terror attack. We saw last year with the shooting at Max Brenner at Sirona. People went and bought out all the stock at Max Brenner and were there almost defiantly. And as you so beautifully captured in your op-ed after the fact, is that people run towards the attack, because our first and foremost responsibility, apart from neutralizing the terrorist, is the safety of our citizens and where we can be of service, where we can be of help.
Absolutely, absolutely amazing to watch the parallels. Nikki Haley is in Israel for 3 days, and pictures of Bibi Netanyahu suggests that he's loving every minute of it.
Well, he is loving every minute, and you know, everything about Bibi Netanyahu is super analyzed. And you know, sadly, he didn't dye his hair for this kind of meeting. He was grinning like a Cheshire cat, and I watched this thinking to myself, Bibi, if you didn't have ears, your smile would literally split your head in two, because you are so happy. And of course, she's just so fabulous, looking stylish, coming into Israel, a very, very humble figure. You know, she doesn't come in with this ego she's actually quite soft-spoken, and she said it's become an unacceptable behavior or culture in the United Nations that this is what they do. And he said to her, he said, you know, that people appreciate truth. And he actually made a very smart statement. He says that she's not just standing up for Israel and for America. She, by calling the UN out on this flagrant bias and disproportionate passing of resolutions, she's actually standing up for the United Nations. She's almost taking them back to the reasons they were founded. So she's met both with President Rivlin and President Rivlin, who, you know, we all just love, and I think that he has to be the most huggable figure in Israel. He said that Israel is no longer alone in the UN. We are no longer the UN's punching bag.
Absolutely amazing. And do we know if there's anything else that that is going to be covered on the agenda?
Well, we don't really know. I think she's going to look at Jerusalem. She will probably, I'm sure, apart from being feted and schmoozed, rightly so, for her tremendous, tremendous, tremendous work that she's doing on our behalf, I think that she will probably be given a greater understanding of the city of Jerusalem, and I'm sure that she will be feted about the idea of moving the embassy. You know, our Deputy Foreign Minister Tsipi Otoveli, who met Ambassador Haley, presented her with a necklace and a pendant of an ancient menorah dating back 1,400 years.
Amazing.
And, you know, this is something extremely, extremely special. I don't think that you give this kind of present just to anybody and said to her that, you know, this is a token of our appreciation for the stand that you are taking. And on behalf of the Israeli public, I thank you for your many actions to correct the bias against Israel in the UN and to fight for the truth. And, I don't think that there's any figure that is as loved, admired, and appreciated in Israel right now, okay, maybe apart from Gal Gadot, then Nikki Haley. And on the subject of Gal, I drove to my clients earlier today, and there's a massive billboard up in Tel Aviv advertising Wonder Woman, and it says, "We love you."
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's
wonderful.
So schmaltzy with
that. Absolutely incredible. Now, Jordan has decided they're not showing Wonder Woman.
Oh, Howard, what is up? I don't know. Are they threatened by Wonder Woman?
Well, clearly.
Are they threatened by the fact that Israel exports not just life-saving superheroes who look
that's
like
what it
this?
Is. That's how they, I think that's what it is. I think there's a fear to show an alternative narrative. Because if you have educated your children that Israelis are evil and they are sneaky and weak and all sorts of things, and they are basically the vermin of the earth, as are the Jewish population, then to see Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman is very, very confusing. And I think you have to stop it.
Well, what she has done for Israel, I mean, just think about it. Here is a young woman, married, mother of two girls, very important. You know, I'm going to throw on my feminist hat here. And here she is. She's magnificent. She's humble. The character that she is portraying is breaking every record. And she stands for justice and truth and peace and saving the planet. And that is exactly what Israel stands for.
Absolutely.
You know, we export this tremendous life-saving technology. We don't always get it right, but we really endeavor to live up to the tenets of Tikkun Olam. And Gal Gadot does it in a fabulous outfit. Look, I'm not mad about the shoes because they are flat, but
you've got to run. You've got to be able to move at speed. Yeah, absolutely right. Now, just tell us a little bit about the Qatar conundrum. Where are we with this?
Well, yet another conundrum when it comes to Qatar. And while we're discussing Jordan, Jordan is significantly downsizing their their diplomatic ties with Qatar. You know, we're seeing something quite magnificent happening in the Middle East. We're seeing this whole shift. I don't think if we're putting all our cards on the table that this has everything to do with the funding of terror. Let's be very, very frank here.
Absolutely.
I think there is a lot of factional issues. There is a lot to do with Iran and stopping them from becoming a major player. But after the last decade or so where we've seen such turmoil in the Middle East, look at the way the political landscape is changing. And almost as a side effect of this, Hamas is being sidelined. Hamas are being exposed for the terror organization that they are. And by sidelining Hamas, they are almost effectively making the Palestinian Authority the recognized leaders of all the Palestinian people. And now the onus is going to be on the Palestinian Authority to kind of come to the fore and be a significant partner and significant player if they want any credibility in the region. And you'll notice that what you haven't heard through all of this is the Israel-Palestinian conflict. It hasn't been
mentioned
once.
Interesting that. You're quite right. You're quite right. Absolutely phenomenal. What a strange world we are living in. Rolene, there we're going to have to leave it. Time is 5:26. Thank you, as always. We'll be chatting to you again tomorrow as the world continues to spin and we're trying to make sense of it.
Well, tomorrow's a massive day for politics. It's election day in the UK. It is the day that Comey testifies in front of Congress. So I think either our whiskey tomorrow will be a commiserating whiskey, but let's hope that our whiskey tomorrow is a celebratory one.
Absolutely right. Time is 5:26. That was Rolene Marks with the Israel Report.